Vancouver and Sacramento. Hopefully have four other live sites. We're going to try a different technology this spring to try to make these interim meetings between the main RTAC meetings productive and successful. So let me just, before we go into the substance, let me just see if our technology is working. We have in Fresno who are hearing me this morning.
Fresno's here. We hear you well.
Okay. Are there any members of the actual RTAC in Fresno?
No, they're not.
Okay. And about how many people do you have there?
Right now we have four people.
Okay. Thank you. San Diego, are you there?
We're here.
Okay. That sounded like Bob. Is that right?
No, it's Kurt Croninger. Neither Gary nor Bob could be here today, so I'm here on their behalf, and there are a total of four of us here today.
Okay, and no RTAC members?
No.
Question. Okay, thank you. Los Angeles?
Yes.
We have two RTAC members here. This is Linda Park, Mike Devereaux, Greg Devereaux.
Morning. And give me a sense of... Greg, how many
people? There are about eight people here total.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, how much time we should reserve for input. And then Oakland?
Hi. We have about eight people here and three RTAC members.
Okay. Tell me who the RTAC members are.
So it's Amanda Eakin with NRDC.
Jim Wunderman, the Bay Area Council.
Mike Ralston,
okay. Thank you. And in Sacramento here, we have about 15 people, and I am the... So let me say a couple of points of contact and then we will launch here. The purpose of this meeting, I don't know whether that's coming from or someone else. So, do I sound fuzzy to people at the other sites?
Yes. Yes.
You always do.
You're cutting in and out in Los Angeles.
You're starting well. Okay. Let me beg for anyone who has any IT knowledge. Is that better? Am I not as fuzzy now?
That's better here.
Okay. I'm trying to separate some of the equipment here. The purpose of this meeting is to really prepare for this discussion at the May meeting of the RTAC. When we said we would do some of these interim meetings at the first RTAC meeting, we promised the RTAC members that they would not become unofficial meetings where sort of unofficial agreements or informal votes or head nods were made. That then put the whole RTAC at the main meetings in a position where they hadn't heard the dialogue and the information and were therefore at some kind of a disadvantage to having a full discussion themselves. But I am very much hoping that we have people on the line that we can have a thorough vetting of this staff presentation today so that we can have a good discussion at the May RTAC meeting and possibly, even if only on a tentative basis, try to land this set of issues. I sort of previewed at the last RTAC meeting that in my mind, I think we've got three big sets of issues to land between now and midnight on September 30th. One is on the table today, which is what metric are we going to use? How are we going to measure performance? Second, I suspect going to be a more challenging discussion is once we know what the yardstick is or the measurement tools, how are we going to advise the airborne that they should determine when the basic test in the scoping plan is met to get to an aggressive target. I expect that discussion to go on through the summer, possibly starting towards the end of the meeting in May, depending on how far we are, but more likely to engage full throttle in June. And then the third is in terms of methodology, what are we advising ARB they should use to sort of check or validate the information that is submitted to them from the region to prove that either their sustainable community strategy or their alternative planning strategy does indeed meet the target? How do you verify, how do you validate, what kind of information do the regions need to submit? So that's the context. And we started talking about the first of those three categories towards the end of our April meeting. We had a brief but lively discussion on the metrics, and the RTAC asked the ARB staff to come back at this meeting with two things. One, more analysis about their thinking on the basic component of a metric or metrics. And secondly, if they had a staff opinion as to what the right way to resolve competing choices was, to tell us what that was and explain it. And I put the staff on the spot and asked them if they thought they could do all that in 2 weeks, and they made the mistake of saying yes, and they did it. And were even able to get the PowerPoint out to them in advance. So I really, really appreciate you guys moving that fast, and I think you've done some really high-quality work here. And finally, logistically, in order for this five-ring circus to have any order today, I think I'm going to actually impose the structure I attempted and failed to at the RTAC meeting when we launched an earlier version of this, which is Doug Vito from ARB, I think, is going to give the presentation. And I really would like Doug to get through the entire presentation. And then we will go back and take it in pieces. And those of you that have previewed it know that there are three components to the metric, and then there's a fourth important issue of interregional travel. And so we will take those four sections in order and field questions from each of the regions. And I think I'll go in the same order I did for the roll call. We'll start in Fresno and go to San Diego and the Los Angeles region and then the Bay Area, and then we'll finish up in Sacramento. And we'll start with questions or comments from any RTAC members, and then we will go to the technical staff, and then we'll open it up to anybody else who's there. So I think everyone will get a chance to pitch in here. We'll go until noon if we need to, and if we finish sooner, we'll... So Doug, Ito, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. As I walk through the slides, I'll try to remind everybody which slide I'm on. It's fairly self-explanatory, but I've got staff here that's going to kick me if it becomes unclear. On the introductory slide, again, this presentation follows up the discussion that we had at the April 7th RTAC meeting. And what we're trying to do today is to focus on the metric, which is separate from the broader topic of the target-setting approaches. So where a target-setting approach results in a target, the metric is used to describe the target. So what we're trying to do today is to provide an understanding of a couple of different ways that the regional emission reduction target can be expressed. Slide 2 is a reminder of how SB 375 describes the greenhouse gas emission reduction targets that ARB is responsible for setting. As the RTAC, you are informing ARB's target setting responsibility by recommending factors to be considered and methodologies to be used. On the next slide, during the course of the discussion, deciding how an emissions target will be expressed, there are several choices that are available. We've identified three key decisions. They're presented in no particular order, since a decision on one inevitably influences how you view a decision on another. And so as you'll notice through the course of the slide presentation, some of the examples repeat themselves, but it's for the purpose of illustrating some of those differences. The first decision is about whether ARB sets a uniform target that is the same for each region, or whether the target should vary by MPO. The second decision is about whether the target should be an absolute ton reduction number or a relative reduction. And the third is whether the emission reduction for a region should be compared against current year conditions or future year conditions. And the next series of slides elaborate on these concepts. Slide four, should each MPO get the same statewide target, or should the targets vary by MPO? And before I go too much further, there's at least one disclaimer about the examples used in the presentation. So just to be clear, all the examples that show up in the presentation, including the numbers embedded in them, are for illustration purposes. For each example, the example that shows what a target might look like as a target and bolded the pertinent pieces of the example. On the next slide, for example one, we're illustrating a uniform statewide target in which every MPO region in the state is required to reduce emissions by 2 million metric tons. The bullets after each example highlight a couple of key points that are relevant. These key points are not intended to be comprehensive, but hopefully they will help you understand the individual concepts a little bit better. In this case, we point out that setting a ton reduction target that is the same for each MPO ignores some fairly significant regional differences. Example two, on slide six, illustrates a case where every MPO in the region, or every MPO region in the state, is required to reduce emissions by 20% rather than 2 million metric tons. This particular illustration shows that there's a benefit to using a percent reduction rather than a ton reduction, in that a percent reduction is sensitive to regional differences. The second bullet on this slide identifies a type of issue that shows up a couple of times throughout the presentation, and we wanted to highlight it because it is important to be aware of. The issue is that in some cases, the same kind of target can be described in more than one way. So using a percent reduction rather than an absolute ton target recognizes that each region will start at different levels, but requires every MPO to achieve the same percent reduction. However, by tying that percent reduction to today's emissions levels, which presumably will not change over time, you've actually created an absolute ton target that is specific to each MPO. So as a result, example two can be viewed as very similar to example three, which I'll cover in the next slide. Example three is an illustration of an MPO-specific target, where a uniform statewide target gives each MPO the same target. An MPO-specific target is different for each MPO. In this case, we've chosen a ton reduction that is different for each MPO. Mm-hmm. Yes. A key issue in...
I hope everybody's still out there.
Allergies, sorry.
Somebody really liked or disliked slide number six.
Issue with the MPO-specific target is that if you set an absolute ton target for each MPO region, the region's ability to meet that target over time is influenced by how the region grows. So, for instance, if the SACOG region grows much faster than projected, it may be harder for them to meet a ton target because the unexpected growth or unanticipated growth adds emissions to the region that were not accounted for in the target. On the other hand, if the region grows much slower than projected, it may be very easy for them to meet the target because with less people, there are less emissions. This leads to the decision of absolute and relative targets. On slide eight, should a target be expressed as an absolute reduction or a relative? Example four on the next slide is the same example used in example three, except that in this case, the emphasis is on the absolute ton reduction. And a key issue with the absolute ton reduction target is that an MPO's ability to meet that target is dependent on how factors like population change over time. Example five on slide 10 provides an illustration of a relative target expressed as a percent reduction below a future year. In this case, 25% below business as usual levels in 2035. Using a relative target allows factors such as population to change over time without impacting the target itself. So a target of 25% below 2035 levels will continue to be 25% below 2035 levels, even if the 2035 emission levels change because population increases faster or slower than expected. The current versus future year issue identified in the second bullet on this slide is the same as the one mentioned earlier as part of example two. If you set a target that is a percent below current conditions, you are effectively setting an absolute time target. Slide 11 uses the idea that a relative target expressed on a per unit basis. For the prior example, we illustrated a target where regional emissions are 25% less than 2035. A per unit metric describes emission reductions on a per unit basis. So in this example, emissions person are reduced 15%. Being a per unit metric actually provides most flexibility when making other decisions about how a target should be constructed. It works whether you set a uniform statewide target or an MPO-specific one, and it works whether you choose to compare emission reductions to the current year or a future year. Slide 12, the next several slides illustrate differences in three kinds of per-unit metrics, per household, per driver, and per capita. The main differences between these three units relate to data availability, the embedded assumptions behind how they are derived and what they describe, and how understandable they are to the general public. For household on slide 13 is a commonly used unit and readily available or derived from existing data. Household travel surveys, census, and other data sources use households the tangible way to describe the characteristics of different regions. Household travel characteristics are dependent on the number of people and their ages in each household, their activities and mode preferences, the number of drivers in each household, and the number of available vehicles. Slide 14, the per driver unit, relies on data that may be available, such as DMV registration data, but it is not a commonly used unit of measurement in either academia or governmental data gathering efforts. Per driver unit is simple enough to easily compare regions and is the most direct link with individual travel behavior. On slide 15, we introduce the per capita or per person unit, which is probably the easiest for the general public to understand and relies on readily available and widely used data. Slide 16, I'm going to switch gears and go back to the original decisions needed to construct a target. The third key question that we're covering, should emission reductions achieved through SB 375 be compared against current year conditions, what is on the ground today, or future year conditions, what regions think would be on the ground in 2020 without SB 375? Since I've discussed the current year and future year questions several times throughout the presentation, I'm not going to spend too much time on these examples. Slide 17. Choosing current year conditions requires the emission reductions to be compared to current emissions levels. Current emission levels are calculated by describing what is on the ground today. So in this example, by 2035, the AMBAG region must reduce emissions 15% below today's emissions levels. In contrast, in slide 18, choosing a future year comparison, AMBAG must reduce emissions by 15% below 2035 business as usual levels. Developing a 2035 business as usual scenario requires taking current year conditions and projecting them out 2035 using assumptions about land use patterns and growth that do not take into consideration SB 375 strategies. Slide 19, back to the original three decisions, and in review, should the target be uniform statewide or MPO specific? Should it be an absolute ton target or relative? Should the emission reductions be compared to current year conditions or future year conditions? Slide 20 has some considerations for the discussion that we have today. Again, the purpose of the presentation is to provide an understanding of several ways that a regional emission reduction target can be expressed. While the examples in this presentation are not comprehensive, many of you probably thought of different combinations as we went through the course of the presentation, they do illustrate some of the key considerations that the RTAC faces. And the examples also reflect two initial staff preferences. As Mike mentioned earlier, we're not expecting an RTAC decision or consensus on any particular metric today. Instead, for ARB staff, our intent is to listen and bring additional information back at the May meeting to continue the discussion with some metrics that are associated with actual MPO scenarios. If there is an interest in a couple of specific types of metrics, we would take data for a few MPOs and illustrate how a target using those metrics might work. Our initial staff preferences, they are just that, initial.
22.
I'm sorry, slide 22. Numbering box. the initial staff preferences are initial and preferences. There's certainly still a lot of discussion and thinking left to do on each of these decisions. So at the moment, we prefer using current year conditions as the basis for comparing regional emission reductions. It has the advantage of certainty. As the slide states, what is on the ground today is more certain than what we think will be on the ground tomorrow. As illustrated in a number of our examples throughout the presentation, using current year conditions as a basis for comparison may present some problems in how a target is expressed. This issue is resolved with our preference for an emission reduction expressed in per capita emissions. I like the per capita unit largely because it is easily understood and widely used. 375 implementation depends in large part on the success of public and local government outreach and education. We believe the easier the target is to communicate, the more successful that implementation will be. Mike, do you want to cover interregional as well, or do you want to talk about the different decisions first and come back to the interregional slide?
Let's head and shut up.
Okay. The last couple slides in the presentation introduce the concept of interregional travel. The question associated with this one is really, how should interregional trips be accounted for? We had a great map that illustrated this. It didn't show up well in black and white, so we reverted to this box and diamond configuration. Essentially, what we have here is an illustration of the different ways a trip could be included in a region's target. So the shading corresponds to the portion of the trip that would be accredited to either MPOA on the solid line or MPOB on the white line. In the first far left bar, it is a take the trip and cut it in half, regardless of where the MPO boundary is. Second, trip B, it says look at the MPO boundary and the trip that occurs within each MPO region is credited to that MPO. Trip C and D are opposites of each other. In one hand, all of the MPO or all of the trip is corresponds to the origin, say the origin in MPOA. And in trip D, the opposite, the entire trip is credited to the destination. The final bar, trip E, says maybe we're not so concerned about the accounting component of it. It's more important to credit or and more important for each region to take full responsibility of that trip. So both MPO A and MPO B would be responsible for considering the entire trip in their target.
Okay. Everybody's hearing okay out there?
Okay.
Okay. So let's now go back to slide 3. And we're going to take it on three issues that are summarized on slide 3.
We're not hearing you as well as you did here, so.
You're breaking up.
Okay. Is this better? Apparently not. Can you?
Yes.
That is. Hold on. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So we're gonna on slide 3. Doug has laid out three basic components. These issues are really interconnected, so we all understand if there are some challenges in talking about them on their own, but nevertheless, try.
You're breaking up again.
Mike, can you use the mic that Doug was using? Because that was pretty clear.
Okay.
Thanks.
Better? Can anybody hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about this. Okay. So we're gonna start talking about the issue of should there be a uniform statewide target, regardless of how it's constructed, or should the target be tailored to and specific to each of the MPOs? And I want to start by giving RTAC members a chance to ask questions, make comments on whether the staff information is complete enough, whether you think additional analysis information would be needed for the May meeting. So in Fresno, are there any RTAC members yet in Fresno?
No RTAC members in Fresno.
Or San Diego?
None present,
okay.
But Gary asked me to represent his views on these questions.
Okay, I'll get to you, Kirk. We're gonna go through the RTAC members, and then we'll go to the staff. So in LA, Linda and Greg, do you have any comments or questions you want to ask about this particular issue of uniform versus MPO specific targets?
I know that Michael Liu has showed up also, so we now have three RTAC members.
Okay, great. So.
We don't have any right now.
Okay. We have at least three RTAC members in the Bay Area, or we did a few minutes ago. Would any of you, Michael or Jim or Amanda, like to ask a question or make a comment on this issue?
This is Jim. You know, my thought is it should be statewide. It should be non. Specific, you know, there should be a generalized process that applies to everybody pretty much equally. I think that'll make it easier for the state to move forward with policy in this area. I think it's going to be pretty tough if we start trying to figure out which MPO should do what. I think it's a burden that would take us a lot more time and would require a lot more analysis and debate, and could also be very divisive. One thing we know is we all create a bunch of carbon, and we all have to reduce it. And my sense of it is that we probably could come up with MPO specific targets if we had enough time to really debate it. But my guess would be if we did that and proposed that to CARB, it would be less likely that CARB would adopt our findings, and we would have put a lot of effort into. Were, you know, in a key component that wouldn't come out the way we recommended.
Okay.
That's my thinking. Doesn't necessarily represent the other folks here.
Okay. Any other comments from Oakland?
Okay, I have been joined by Jerry Walters and Andy Chesley. Do you, either of you or both of you want to make a comment or ask a question at this point?
I just have a couple questions. I can speak loudly if people can hear me. A couple of these questions are specific to the San Joaquin Valley, so I wanted to touch upon those. One is that the legislation does allow for San Joaquin Valley MPOs to, I guess, team up in one way or another in regard to this. So if we go towards a, not towards a uniform approach, but towards MPO specific, then we need probably to have those teamed up MPOs identified pretty early. So that doesn't give us, we would have to do that quickly is what I'm, so how quickly would that have to occur?
I think part of the, this is Doug, part of the legislation allows the MPOs to develop an SPS in conjunction or an APS in conjunction with each other. And, you know, part of the discussion that the Valley would need to have is whether or not you want a single target for that group of that group of counties, individual targets by which you combine your SPS efforts to meet. But yeah, so it would have to happen within the next year, you know, over the course of the next year in terms of developing a recommendation if the region could choose.
Okay, so that's good because in our discussions I've been targeting 8 months as being we have to make a decision regarding that. And that's a good time frame. Okay. Second of all, and this is once again a little bit more specific to the Valley question on this. When we talk about regional differences between regions, and we have a high growth area, which is what the San Joaquin Valley is expected to be in regard to this. There's a certain advantage in terms of target setting if we use today's numbers. But if we want to be sensitive towards those areas that have growth, and there's an argument that growth areas have a larger ability to produce reduction, do we talk about periodic adjustments if we go towards, say, a 2035 figure? And how does that work, periodic adjustment? Every 5 years or so?
Periodic adjustments to the target?
To the target.
Well, the statute does allow ARB to come back and revisit the target every 4 or 8 years.
So, and which makes sense. You want to be sensitive. You don't want to be modifying the targets on a regular basis, but then again, you want to be sensitive enough so that you're not overburdening one region against another. So 4, 8 years?
Yes.
All right. There's an argument that when, and I think you made it, that when you go to a relative measure, you are taking into account some of these regional differences inherently regarding this. Are there regions in the state that we can take a look at today and say, gee, things are going to be dramatically different from today in that particular region? The San Diego region has grown at such and such a rate, but over the course of the next 30 years, it's going to be dramatically different. Are we seeing regions in the state where that stands out, because that can be disadvantageous to a region if there is no change and if there is any change in their demographic.
Do you want to talk about the relative versus absolute, or do you want to maintain the discussion on?
I don't want to dive into the second one, but I think Andy's asking a more general.
It's a more
overarching question, I think.
It is meant to be more general. are there regions that are going to be different?
I'm happy to give you my two cents worth, which is about probably what it's worth, on that. I suspect that because of the economic crisis alone, that all of the regions are going to have to do updated forecasts, and that for a variety of reasons that our new forecasts are going to be different than our old forecasts. And I would expect the Department of Finance set of forecasts, whenever they release their latest numbers, to be in some ways different. I think even before the economic crisis, just the information that Steve Heminger asked us all to look at the last meeting in which staff sent out indicates that some regions are likely to be growing at much faster rates in the future than they have in the past, and others are getting full and are probably slowing down, certainly not going to zero. But my personal feeling is there will be wide variability across 18 MPOs that are directly affected.
Thank you. I'll end there. Thank you.
Gary?
Okay, I do have a couple of questions and observations, and I'm going to put these into the context of the assumption for the moment that we go to a pro rata form of allocating the target. So it's maybe per capita or per household. I'm not going to talk about that at the moment. But I think that the pro rata approach does a lot to overcome equity issues, interregional equity issues. But I still think there are several considerations that need to be included in our thinking that suggest that maybe a uniform statewide average, even at that point, is going to create some inequities. One is that certain regions are fast growth, certain regions are slow growth. Another is that certain regions, I think, have reached the point of diminishing return, where they might, on balance, already have relatively low GHG generation per capita. They already have a built-in culture of using alternate modes, for example. And so achieving additional reductions in those regions would be done more on the behavior pattern changes of existing residents and future residents. So I think that's worth considering. I'm not advocating a certain position. I just want to point out that it could result in certain inequities. Certain regions also have more embedded infrastructure, transit, for example, that allows them to achieve reductions in different measures than those that would have to invest heavily in the additional infrastructure to accomplish a similar percentage reduction.
I'm going to step in here real quick. We're hearing a little bit of Jerry over the phone from the speakers and some of the other locations. If it's possible to put your phones on mute, that would be great. Thank you.
So those are two observations. I liken this consideration to the discussions that go on around water conservation, water rationing, where some areas of the state are generally low users and are already using less per capita and therefore could withstand, in their view, a lower assignment of a reduction in water consumption. But other areas have very good reasons for consuming more per capita. And so I'm just suggesting that we need keep open mind about any remaining inequity, even when we get beyond today's discussion, and examples would help in presenting these. And then I also wanted to second what Andy said, generally on the subject of scalability of whatever we develop here. Right now, we're all thinking about region by region, MPO by MPO, and equities that occur there. But within certain of those regions, whatever we us ideally would also scale down to individual subregions or counties or perhaps in Andy's case, MPOs within the overall system, the overall team. And then ideally as well, it would scale from the regional level down to the city and county level. So the same kind of ideas and the same philosophy would occur and be considered on a city to city, county to county basis, rather than have them have to construct and rewrite rules when they get to that one. So those equity issues, I think, occur. We think of them across regional boundaries, but also let's, in the back of our minds, be thinking about inequities that could occur even within regions. Thank you.
Okay. This is Mike again. Let me make one comment on this topic, and then we'll go round robin again and hear from the technical staff and anybody else there. It may be that the bridge between, if I'm understanding Jim Wunderman's argument, that there ought to be a statewide metric as opposed to an MPO-specific metric, and Jerry Walter's questions or warnings that there are many, many variables that are distinct within the region, and there may be some fairness issues that can't be ignored. It may be that the common ground between those two points of view is that what we end up with is a common method that is used within the regions that asks all of these questions and probably many more, including what's your growth rate and what's your existing transportation infrastructure and what's your current level of emissions. But when that methodology is applied, it picks up the differences in the regions and leads to CARB giving a tailored answer for that is sort of form fit each of the regions. But hopefully we would pick up some of the uniformity needs with the commonness of the methodology. That's just a thought to throw out there. Okay, let's stay on this question, which is uniform versus MPO-specific, and I want to go back around the state. Are there technical staff people to RTAC members in Fresno who want to ask questions or raise comments?
Yeah, we have some comments here.
Okay.
This is Tom Jordan with the San Joaquin Valley Air District, and, you know, I think when we're looking at these questions, one of the important things is to think about what policy choices we're trying to impact. And, you know, I think one of the questions that comes up with the uniform versus MPO specific is how do you give credit to people that are already making some of those policy choices that we would like to encourage? And I think that goes back to Jerry's comment about some regions are, you know, in the area of diminishing returns for what they've done. So I think however we do it, we should give people credit for good policy choices that they're already making. And it's kind of hard to separate the uniform statewide or region specific from some of the others. As Doug mentioned earlier, they kind of work together. And I think that issue in particular, that using the current year or future year, has a big impact. If you're trying to give people incentive to make good policy decisions that reduce greenhouse gases, it would seem to me that looking at future year conditions might be a way to go, because you could look at what would happen if you don't make those policy decisions versus what the outcome is if you make the changes that should be beneficial.
Okay, Tom, I am going to ask, I know this is not easy, but I am going to ask you to try to just focus on the first question. We'll get to the future year issue about on our third round robin.
All right.
Okay.
So, you know, I see some benefits from the uniform statewide, but I think however you do that, you should give people credit for good policy decisions that they're already making.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from Fresno?
Yeah, this is Troy Hightower from Kern Council of Government, and I think that that last comment about a common methodology among the region would be a good idea, especially within the valley here. We've had discussions about that, and since we're all on a very short time frame, not only I think it's a good idea, I think we can see a way how we can do it. I support that concept of a common methodology, separate from whether it's a common target.
Okay. Other thoughts from Fresno?
We're done for now.
Okay. On to San Diego.
Okay. I just very quickly want to start by saying that the our views on these issues are all framed in the idea of taking a systems view to developing a methodology for these targets. And by that we mean that we need to understand the capability of the system before we can really assign a target that we know is achievable. And to do so, we believe that we need to understand the capabilities of each of the regions to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, roll that up to CARB so they can see what everybody thinks they can do, and then base, I know this is, I'm oversimplifying for the sake of time, but base the target setting on the capability of the system, which, you know, I want to really compliment CARB staff for the presentation and their attempt to, as much as possible, simplify a very complex issue. But there are many, many differences between the regions, and in order to be able to take those into account, including giving credit for regions that have attained a certain level that others might not have, I think we have to stay region by region.
Okay. Other thoughts from San Diego?
No, I think that's it on this issue.
Let me, Kirk, let me quickly piggyback on your comment to also remind the RTAC and our partners here that another ask from the RTAC at the last meeting was that each of the regions come forward as soon as possible with sort of a description of the plans and scenarios that we have and what some of the underpinning components and assumptions of those are, such as what is, and in my mind, that means such things as what are the growth rates, what's the jobs housing balance, what's the housing product mix, the issue we heard so much from Randall Lewis about, what are the demographics, do we have a bunch of old people or a bunch of young people in our model, what is the system, as Kirk said, what's the transportation system, is there a mature transit system or a big emphasis on expanding it in the scenarios or otherwise, that all of that information, and this is going to take a lot of work from the MPOs, but we need to get it on the RTAC table as soon as possible, I think, to help us not only understand for sure what we mean by these metrics, but to set the stage for the next level of discussion, which is how do we determine what's that magic balance point of aggressively achievable. So I think, you know, the staff will be out with some asks of the MPOs very soon on that score. Okay, let's go to the LA
Mike,
region. Yes.
We actually just had one RTAC member join us here in San Diego.
Oh, excellent.
Stephen Doyle has joined us.
Okay. Stephen, welcome. It's probably a little unfair to ask you to comment yet on a presentation that you missed, but if you have anything on your mind, you're welcome to.
Thanks, Mike. I'll pass it this
moment. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, Los Angeles area.
Hi, Mike. Washa, hi.
Hi, Washa.
Boy, I saw your upset with me or something without responding to the question. With regard to the number one uniform statewide or NGO specific, I do want to clarify one thing. That although we are going to express staff position, we have just kicked off the outreach process, actually, I would say, as of yesterday here. We have had a workshop with our technical community representatives and some regions here at SCAD yesterday, shared with everybody of SCAD proposed methodology for allocating sub-regional shares. So I just want to say that certainly our staff's position here does not or has not yet reflect the input from our community. And while we are really indifferent in the two, but we somehow want to go to NGO-specific, we believe that could probably be a little bit more fairly or more representative to the specific reach out to you.
Okay. Thank you, Washa. Any other voices from LA?
Yes, this is Lane Chen, Deputy Executive Officer with South Coast AQMD. I'm here with Barry Wallace team today. I have one observation and one comment. One observation is all these variables are interrelated. If we end up selecting the relative target, maybe it makes really no difference in terms of uniform statewide or MTO specific. It's uniform because the per capita number will be the same as regional because each region has different population will come up with a different numbers. I just wonder whether there's a kind of hybrid approach that if you look at the MPO, but not literally region specific, whether there's some readily available definition for different land use types, such as urban versus rural, that you have some major categories that we can find rather than go too extreme. Just offer us a comment.
Okay. Interesting idea.
My question, can I just add something here very quick? I think Ning Chan is making a good point here, but at the same time, our understanding is that even with the possibility either goes with absolute or relative, it could still vary across MTOs. That's at least from my understanding. Right? Even if we say per capita or per driver or per household, that per unit or per capita percentage could still be allocated differently across different MTOs.
Right. I think that's one of many possible hybrids. Okay, final, I'm not trying to rush you, but other voices in L.A.?
If I may, I remember Barry Wallerstein's discussion about the idea of a point system, and we start talking about all those different factors that were mentioned by the previous speaker in terms of, you know, existing transportation and population and age and all that, that might be a way to help do the MPO specific. I'm intrigued with that idea.
Okay. And who I didn't hear who that was. Who was just speaking?
Linda Park.
Oh, Linda. Okay, I'm sorry.
Lastly, Cesar Espica, representing Orange County Transportation Authority, and slightly against what GAG is considering, we prefer a uniform statewide approach. After all the MPOs, I heard the issues with San Joaquin Valley. Basically, MPOs as defined within SB 375, even if it's allowed that they want to super join or create a super MPO and then afterwards do the uniform allocation equally.
So let me ask a follow-up question on that. So by uniform, do you mean I'm going to withdraw that. We'll come back because these are so interrelated. It's hard to follow up until we've been through all three of them. Any other thoughts from the LA region? Okay, Bay Area, you're on. No more beyond the.
You're good.
You're good. Okay.
I have a comment for the Bay Area. This is Jim Andrew. I'm a land use lawyer, and I'm here on behalf of ULI San Francisco District Council. I prefer a statewide uniform standard as well for the reasons that Jim Wunderman stated earlier. I am intrigued by the idea of a system of metrics that could be applied that might result in differences across MPOs, although I think that also suffers potentially from the same sort of problems that Jim Wunderman alluded to earlier, which is difficulty in getting it done and difficulty in implementation through the politics, although less so than just absolute numbers. But what about another type of hybrid that may be a little bit easier, using VMT as a proxy by having it be somewhat logarithmic, meaning that for the greatest areas that have the greatest amount of VMT, you have to reduce it by greater chunks the more VMT you have, and the closer you get to some number of VMT per capita or household, that seems to get, it pushes the envelope of how low you can get it. You have to reduce it less and less so that you are accommodating a bit the difference across regions, but you are not punishing too much those who are already making a lot of progress, like I think the person from the San Joaquin Air District mentioned. So that's just another idea, is make it uniform but somewhat logarithmic so that it.
Got it. Any other thoughts from the Bay Area?
This is Amanda. I just wanted to clarify. I just I asked Jim a follow-up question to his assertion that it should be uniform statewide, and I thought it was just important to clarify that I think, and correct me if I'm speaking for you, I think the comment wasn't that the same number, the same target should be given to each region, because that would be, well, as Doug Ito pointed out, that would seem to fail to recognize differences in starting points and abilities to reduce VMT across regions, but that potentially it was a percentage reduction that
yes,
would be
yes.
relatively consistent.
I should have said that. So you were correct. We'll clarify. Does that make more sense?
Well, I think we're all having a challenge that these are so interrelated that it is a little hard to talk about them separately. But I think we're doing pretty well, and by the time we get through the other two, hopefully clarity will rain down upon us. So I lost the audience in Sacramento on that one. So, let me look out to the – we have about 20 people now, and you need to go to – what do they need to do to be heard? Okay, you need to come to the magic chair here. So anybody else who wants to talk here, why don't you sort of queue up behind Mr. Higgins so we can move through this quickly.
Really, Bill Higgins with the League of California Cities. And on the issue of whether it should be uniform or MPO specific, I think the legislation always anticipated that there would be some specifics by the MPO. Otherwise, what would be the purpose of the provision that allows the MPO to suggest its own target? If we had a uniform state target, that sentence in SB 375 would be meaningless. So, and I think for the reasons that Mr. Walters laid out, Jerry laid out, I thought made a really good point. I also think there's been an acknowledgement that there's different. If you have a farm-driven economy or an urban economy, there's going to be, you know, vehicle miles traveled will be different. I've also had, and this is an outlying example, but it's something I think that's worth us thinking about. I have a couple of county areas that have suggested that they are going to be developing intense wind and solar businesses in their region, which is going to improve the vehicle mile traveled in there because they're going to send cars out to check all this equipment. And if you have areas like that that are developing green businesses in a way that is going to change the nature of the economy and how it's driven, I think you need to take that into consideration before you just hand down a 10% reduction or something like that. I think that there you will find in the modeling and in a lot of the other boards that there are some uniform approaches to approach this, but I think you need to provide the MPOs the ability to seek divergence from that to meet local conditions, and that's what SB 375 always anticipated.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Morning, Richard.
Good morning. What do I speak to?
Right here.
Oh.
Good morning. This is Richard Lyon with the California Building Industry Association, and I want to kind of echo what Mr. Higgins said. Having worked on Senate Bill 375, I think to keep with the spirit and the intent of 375, it was to allow each region to work with the Air Resources Board, determine its own capabilities, its own growth pressures, and then make a recommendation to CARB as to what its target should be based on its based on those factors. So the spirit and intent of 375 was not set a one-size-fits-all standard, whether that's by way of a single numeric or even a percentage, but rather to do it on an MPO by MPO basis. The LA Basin is not Sacramento. In fact, in the LA Basin, the bill allows for subregions to prepare sustainable community strategies as well. So that's another indication that this is intended to be grown from the ground up, of course, with the interaction between the subregions and regions and the Air Resources Board. And that all points not to a statewide standard, but rather to an MPO by MPO factor. So I think the home builders would fall pretty strongly on that side.
Okay, thank you. I don't see anybody else signing up, so let's go on to issue number two, which is this issue of should it be an absolute or a relative number. And we'll do the RTAC members first, and until I'm told otherwise, I'm assuming that there is not an RTAC representative at the Fresno site, and so we'll go to San Diego. Stephen, do you want to comment on this question or not?
Thank you, Mike. My personal belief is that we should be looking at a relative number. Again, I think as you stated earlier, the tie-in between the MPO-specific reductions and a relative target number makes a lot more sense. And to try to target absolute numbers when things are changing as quickly as they are and alternatives are going to become feasible and infeasible, I think just adds to the complexity of the issue.
Okay, thank you. In L.A., Linda or Michael or Greg, do you have comments on this one?
I'm Linda here, and I'm definitely leaning towards relative, but I can't help thinking that the next question is the real key, whether we're talking from current year or future. So
that's
the point of the question, that yes, relative is where I'm thinking.
And I would concur, Mike, this is Greg.
Okay. Final call from L.A.? Okay. Bay Area. Jim, Amanda, Michael?
Yeah, I think Amanda, in commenting on my previous original comment, I think we would feel relative will work better.
Okay.
Be more applicable to what we're trying to achieve.
And this is Mike. I agree with that.
So this is Amanda. I guess I just want to make an overall comment, which is that, you know, CARB under EB32 has to reduce emissions to 1990 levels. That's, you know, that's a number that we all know. And I support a relative approach, and I support a per capita approach. However, I guess I want to hear from CARB staff for discussion. That there is a need to do some sort of accounting statewide of what we'll expect from every region. And a per capita relative approach, as some of the other speakers have mentioned, recognizes that this is a very dynamic system with a lot of potential for change. And even a region's ability to reach a per capita reductions target can come from a number of different strategies and scenarios that result in a number of different GHG emission implications. So I guess while I support this relative approach, I want to make sure that at some point there's an accounting that overall SB 375 is contributing, you know, as Mary Nichols reminded us the last meeting, to CARB's ability to reach our AB 32 targets. And so that we need to have some ability to ensure, and maybe it's through CARB adjusting targets in the interim, to ensure that the transportation and land use sector is making an adequate contribution.
This is Mike. Let me add to that. I think I agree that we're agreeing that a relative approach is possibly the easiest way and the fairest way to begin this. But the percentage that we might come up with if we embark on a relative approach has to be, as I think Amanda said, related back to the actual absolute targets of SB 375. 5, which are to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels. We know what those are, and the percentage that we come up with, the relative percentage that we come up with, has got to be related to, there's got to be some thinking, some projections about what that percentage needs to be in order to get it there.
This is Kirk Arparis in Sacramento. I'll respond for ARB staff. We agree that there absolutely will be, as part of the process going forward, a need, regardless of the units of the target or the metric itself, to add it up, so to speak, and describe for the public and for our board the benefits of the targets in relation to the overarching AB 32B. So, yes, we do agree that that would have to be something we'll need to do.
Okay. Let me do what I suspect will be a quick additional round on item 2 to see if anybody wants to comment on this sort of secondary issue of if it's a relative number, do you have an opinion on, or do you need additional information on this issue of is it per driver, per person, or a per household basis? And let me just go site at a time and take all comers on this one. Anybody in Fresno want to comment on that?
This is Mike Binner, Fresno COG. I think we support the relative with per capita. Anybody else want to comment here?
Yeah, this is Troy Hightower, current COG. On slide number 9, the first bullet, it says that regardless of changes in key factors like population, as a technical matter, all of our models relied on population, so that may be an issue for us.
Okay. San Diego? Anybody in San Diego want to comment on drivers versus people versus households?
Yes, this is Kurt again. And again, bringing forth Gary's views on this and Sandag's staff views, we feel that, first of all, that a relative target would only be meaningful if it was a per unit, per capita, or whatever, per driver. And Sandag does not advocate a per unit target, rather an absolute target for the region, because we believe that that provides the greatest flexibility for us as a region to adopt strategies to reach that target. And again, if we're going to look at a region-wide target as opposed to a per-unit target, relative is not meaningful because, you get a percentage, you're just going to make an absolute target out of it anyway. So we advocate an absolute region-wide target.
Okay. Any other input from San Diego?
Are we talking about...
That's Clint Daniels talking.
This is Clint. Are we talking about... are we to regional versus per capita? Or are we still talking about absolute versus percentage?
Well, I was trying to just do a question on, if it is relative, do you have an opinion on per driver, per household, or per person? Or do you have comments on the staff presentation and the information presented?
I'll hold my comment then.
Okay. On to Los Angeles.
I think that is Greg. I think that we're comfortable with per capita, provided that it takes demographics and demographic differences into consideration. So I do think at the next meeting it would be helpful to have some discussion of the three household driver and per capita, but the pros and cons within them and the differences that it might make with different factors like demographic.
Okay.
I like the idea of per capita because it's easy and it's translatable to the individual actions, and then also it may be
something that can be widened when we start looking at AB 32 type of issues, that it can be that same metric measure.
Okay. Any more from LA?
Mike, are you pretty much integrating RTIC members with technical staff? This is a question.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, I do have a couple of observations before getting to comments. First of all, Mike, I think these three things in order, perhaps it is more kind of making more sense to talk about it first, then second, and then the first, because I don't know how we're going to say whether per capita per household per driver, because we don't have data for the future per driver. Although we may consider per driver is one of a comparative per capita household could be considered for today condition. And I don't think any MPO could come out with driver projection data for the future. So if we can really discuss number three, then we can better discuss number two. Then actually probably even go back to number one. I don't know if that's what you want to consider.
Okay. That's an interesting
thing. Right? Yeah, and also I do want to say that if we talk about between absolute and relative, if we're going to talk about from today's condition, that's irrelevant. Because we know what today is. Then it doesn't matter if it's absolute or relative. It's the same number anyway, right? But for the future, it could be different. It depends on how they grow, more aggressive or less aggressive. It could vary. But I do have one quick question. At the last RTAC meeting, I believe there were some requests from RTAC members for ARD staff to come out with some analysis on what it means with different metrics. So I guess that will also help us to facilitate a discussion about which one could be utilized or not.
Okay. Well, Washaw, maybe offline, if you could just give a phone call or send an email to the staff, maybe indicating what additional analysis you think would be helpful for the May meeting. That would be helpful. Okay, final call in LA. Okay, let's go to Oakland on the issue of driver versus person versus household. Any comments there on that issue?
I have a question for staff. I see the difference between drivers and then per capita and household. But what does the staff see as the difference between using household and per capita? The reason I heard mostly was that it was easier to understand by the public. But I know that household is almost as common as per capita. You hear it all the time in terms of median income and other kinds of demographic information that's portrayed in the media. So what is the difference in terms of impact, not publicity impact, but what's the difference between using the household measure and the per capita measure?
This is Kirk Harris again from ARB staff. And this may have been part of the question that Greg Devereaux was asking in terms of wanting to understand what how the different units capture demographics. You can imagine a situation where you have a household with two drivers and a blended family with three or four children will have a very different driving pattern than a household with two infill urban young professionals, and the trying to use the driver or per capita metric would come up with a very different looking number because the driving patterns associated with those households would be very different.
So if you let me just follow up on that. So if you use let's say you're comparing two regions. You're comparing an urbanized region and a more rural region. What is going to be the difference if we use a household measure as opposed to per capita measure in terms of the reduction?
This is Mike McKeever. It has a lot to do
with what your average household size is, which often relates to what the what your demographic forecast is in terms of what's the overall age of your population, and it could be different in 2020 than 2035, probably will be. It also tends to correlate strongly with the ethnicity, the ethnic makeup of your region, and so you could easily have average household rates between two regions that differ by 10 to 15%, even possibly 20%. And so if you do it on a per household basis, my opinion is that, yes, those data are commonly available, but that it may mask some, it may add in some variability and inaccuracy into the numbers compared to what you would do if you did it on a, either a per capita or per driver.
I guess my point is, will by using household, are you going to factor in things that we should be factoring in, like income, race, and location, in ways that you wouldn't be getting if you used per capita?
Yeah. Some of the answer to your very excellent question, I think, will be best understood when we bring forward this MPO data set that the RTAC is asking for, because I think it will be clear when we do that that these demographic assumptions about age in particular and in fact how many households are out there are in most cases anyway part of what you have to determine in order to run your travel model to feed the air emissions model. And so regardless of whether the way it's summed up at the end as households or people or drivers, those critical issues of how old is the population and how do they form into households all in fact get fed into the travel model, regardless of how we decide to tally these at the end, in most cases anyway. Okay, so it's clear we have some more work to do just in terms of understanding and explaining this issue of these three choices. Other comments from L.A. before we go to the Bay Area?
We were in the Bay Area.
Oh, we're already there. I'm sorry.
This is Amanda. I sort of have a question for staff. It seems to me there's something appealing about using this per driver or per driving age population metric just because it is the most direct link to travel behavior. And it is also the information that is, I guess, least commonly used at this point. So I wanted to understand from staff what might be the other potential drawbacks or difficulties of using a per-driver metric. You know, it seems to me just, for example, as I think through per capita, that it could be that a region would have just, for any given reason, a large growth in household size. And so a large increase maybe in the number of non-driving age population, but just an increase in number of children, and that could affect your denominator per capita, and it could look like you're having a reduction in VMT per capita, which had nothing at all to do with a reduction in driving. So I think there are just numerous concerns to think through, and you know, real pros and cons of each of these metrics. And so with the per driver, I'm wondering what's the downside? Is that going to be really difficult information to ascertain?
To the extent we've been able to think the question forward, primarily the concern has been over the availability of the information. Washa spoke earlier that if the preference of the committee was to, for example, and I'm jumping forward, sorry, Mike, to the next question, to compare it to future conditions, projecting the number of future drivers is something that I'm personally unaware of really any data and any methodologies for doing that. Much more standard approaches for projecting population and households. So it's primarily our focus has been on the difficulty in constructing the and obtaining the data.
But it would seem that you could project the number of the driving age population if you would do population projection.
True.
Right, you can certainly imagine some methodologies to do that, and the question would be, are the uncertainties that you've introduced into your method offset by the benefit.
Again, I think this will be informed a lot when we bring the various MPO scenarios forward, and we can ask the question, okay, well, how much of this are you doing now? You know, what test the hypothesis? Would this be harder or easy to do? Okay, final call from the Bay Area, now that I know where we are. Okay, Sacramento, anybody want to comment on this? Yes. Gary.
Yeah, I do, and I wanted to emphasize the distinction that Amanda just made between the per driver and the per driving age population, because I think that per driver is problematic other and above and beyond just forecasting the data. You can envision a region that is successful in reducing the number of drivers in the region, reducing the number of people through its, you know, well-intended and high-performance approach. It then suffers as a result because their allocation reduces due to their success. And I also think it's difficult to forecast. I think driving age population is no more difficult to forecast than number of households. A lot of variables Mike mentioned and others have mentioned, a few of them in household formation. So it's a step less effective than just pure population, but it has the advantage of targeting those individuals or the change in demographics in a region that are most closely correlated to travel. And so it's effective in that regard. It also, I think, to some degree incentivizes those regions or subregions or municipalities that respond to the changing demographic. If we think that there is a demand for more infill housing, more transit-oriented housing, and employment centers that comes as a result of the empty nesters and the young urban professionals, those may be households that have more, you know, drivers per household than, you know, the growth in larger households. And so we want them to have the credit for those driving age population that they accommodate in the right locations and whose travel habits they change.
Okay.
I agree wholeheartedly with Jerry on this. I've been writing seriously some notes here to have on this. So, he said that a lot better than I do. The per capita tends to be the among these three choices, the choice that least correlates well to trip making, and that's what we're trying to deal with here. In the RTAC. So I strongly argue either a household or a driving age. Any error that might occur in terms of our projected driver age will be much smaller, I think, than the error that's put in here based on a per capita basis. Also, I think people understand trip making occurs in a family unit as opposed to on an individual basis. My 13-year-old trips are my trips. And I think people understand that.
Okay. We have one more comment from Sacramento, and then we'll go to the issue everybody wants to talk about, number three.
This is Autumn Bernstein with Climate Plan. I actually just have a question for staff. There's a bill that Transform is sponsoring, and I apologize that I don't know the bill number. I'm terrible with numbers. But it essentially asks the MV to collect more VMT data as part of the annual registration process. And I'm just curious if you guys have analyzed that bill and if you think how it would play into this discussion of driver data versus per capita.
I'm not familiar with the bill. I can't comment. I'm sorry.
Okay. We'll go on to number three, which is, regardless of whether you have an absolute or a relative number, regardless of how you express it, is that number a change from current conditions or is it a change from some projected future condition? And we'll do our TAC members first, so I assume I'm going to San Diego,
Stephen, is this an item you want to comment on?
Just to say that I've got more questions than I do opinions at this point.
Okay. Questions are fine.
with current year, you have knowledge of today's factors, where you're at, where you're going. With future year comparisons, you're making projections that have many variables attached to them. And I see a opportunity to become much more clouded in your decision making when you're looking at future years. Likewise, with current years, we're dealing with a situation that today economically has made dramatic changes in vehicle miles traveled and other greenhouse gas issues as compared to just a number of years ago. But one would argue that just a number of years ago, we were in a very overheated economy, and that's not the norm either. So given all of the different directions you could go, I guess I would start with current year, but I still have a lot of questions about how we get from here to there, if you know what I mean.
Those are great questions. L.A., you have any answers? Greg, Linda, Michael? Current year versus future year?
I'm sorry. I think we are rather agreeable in terms of using a current year because it gives us a better baseline.
Thanks.
This is Michael Wu. I just wanted to add, I think that a lot of local officials would prefer basing the reduction on current year, but it seems to me that all of this discussion is really begging the question, depends on how big the reduction is, right? I mean, the baseline defines for us our starting point, but and talking about current year gives us something more stable, something that's more definite. But ultimately, I think when it gets down to the level of local officials, the big challenge is going to be how much reduction are we going to have to swallow?
Mike, this is Greg, and being mindful of Amanda's comment about the need to have some absolute reduction from AB 32, it seems that what you posited earlier, you know, that a common methodology which applied then giving different answers almost needs to be applied MPO-specific in a relative way, taking into consideration a dynamic change between current and future. I mean, it's almost, I'm starting to wonder how this stays static or how it needs to become a dynamic model. And I'm not sure that the 4 and 8 year changes are going to be sufficient. I know that's a mouthful, but.
Okay. All excellent points, though. and Richard Lyon just had a heart attack over there in the corner of the room here.
No, I think actually Richard might be in concurrence. I mean, the dynamic part of it really has to adjust in specific regions as growth occurs. And projecting that growth, as we've seen for the current downturn, is very difficult.
Right.
Okay. This is Elaine Chan. I want to offer my comment on this. Personally, my inclination is looking at the current year, but because it's consistent with AB 32, that by 2020 we need to get back to the 1990 level. But when we talk about current year, I think the current year has the really historical current year, not really the present year, because you really need to adjust it to not to penalize the actions already taken, especially in the last couple of years, and the many significant efforts they put in to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. But if we were to go with the future year that we have done in the planning efforts looking at future year, then I think we need to make sure that the methodology that will be consistent so the uncertainty can be minimized, so the projection uncertainty wouldn't outweigh the progress of whatever target we're setting.
Okay.
Let me now go to the RTAC members in open.
Mike?
Yes?
Yeah, Washa. Sorry.
Yeah, Washa, I'm sorry. I'm trying to limit this at this point to just RTAC members, and then we'll make another round around the state to pick up the staff and everybody else, okay?
Okay.
So if there are no more RTAC member comments in L.A., I'm gonna go to the RTAC members in the Bay Area. So, Jim, Mike, Amanda, comments on this one?
This current versus future year.
Right.
I think our thinking here was we were in the camp of the leaning toward the current.
Okay.
That would be the most relevant way to do it, and would least enable any kind of gaming the system based on projections that are, you know, harder to understand and predict.
A little bit of a caveat on that. I think the current is clearly the one that gives us the easily measurable baseline to start with. And the law has built into it the 4-year and 8-year possibilities of revision based on what happens in the future.
Right.
Since 375 is trying to get us away, we're trying to avoid this issue with 375 and at least get to a different future than the one that would happen if we didn't do this. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't, maybe in the modeling of the current, take into account the kind of factors that Mike mentioned earlier in coming up with the existing baseline. I'm concerned that with that if we just start with where we are now, without some adjustments, we may be leaving out some. We may be heading in a direction that may leave out some.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what I think it was Greg Devereaux said, which is just that this is such a dynamic system and that this is going to, the success of this effort is going to rely heavily on CARB continuing to monitor progress in different regions and adjust targets as needed. And that we seem to be, you know, converging on a consensus around the current year, you know, current conditions is a little bit more certain and makes sense. But as my colleague just pointed out, we do need to think about the different growth rates in different regions when setting the targets from a current condition. And then those growth rates may change over time. Or, you know, our projections may or may not be accurate. And I think it's just incumbent upon CARB to, you know, recognize the dynamic nature of the system and continue to adjust as needed.
Okay. We're in Sacramento now. Andy or Jerry, comments on this item?
Well, Mike, this is Andy Chesley. My comment would be that current year does work best because of its certainty. Actually, I do like to game the system, Jim, but you're right. That probably is the best to discourage that.
You'll get another chance when we get you in regional travel, Andy.
What else do we have to do if we can't game the system? I would say that I think maybe the key discussion will be around how often CARB needs to update this. 4 years seems a tad too early to do that. I would lean towards that 8-year. I'm not sure quite why 8 years is a number, but we do need to set up a system where CARB can adjust over time.
Okay.
This is Jerry. I'd just like to make 2 points. One is, as we all seem to be thinking, that current conditions are better than future. And I think this was said before, deciding what current conditions are appropriate as a benchmark is important.
Mm-hmm.
There are different regions that have experienced different degrees of foreclosures and unemployment, and as a result, 2008 or 2009 conditions on a per anything basis are distorted as a result. So I would suggest something like 2005, which was between a boom bust and another bust, and it's also one of the more convenient years for collecting data you know, might be considered. It's also around the AB 32 year of passage becoming law. And then on the question of monitoring and adjusting over time, I think that to some degree, it may be less necessary than people are suggesting that we tie this to a per capita or the right kind of per something growth rate than or metric, because then different regions that grow at different rates get budget supporting the per person budget. So I don't think that it's necessary to do it often. And I think that doing it often reduces the certainty that an MPO has as to what they're planning for, what measures they're implementing over a period of time. So I think they want a time horizon that's long enough to plan within and deliver on.
Okay, let's go back around the state to see if technical staff or others in the room want to comment on this current versus future years. Fresno, you have thoughts on this question?
Yeah, I'd like to just kind of back up a moment and talk about the by population or driver. I know, all MPOs have methods and standards we have set for projecting population, and we adopt these to our policy boards to make them official. And we don't have any established methodology of predicting drivers, nor do I know exactly how we could do that accurately. Other than that, I would assume some kind of a current year condition. And I'd also like to say that I thought this was real simple until we start talking about it. Anybody else here? I think that's all for Fresno.
Gee, I wish we were ready to adjourn. That would be
long.
And we could all head to the bar, nearest bar. Okay, on to San Diego.
Yeah, this is Clint Daniels. I think we're in agreement on that it should be based on current year conditions, and I'm not going to belabor that point. One issue sort of related to, current year versus future year, and this goes back to the per capita issue, is that, the goal is to get back to AAB 32 1990 levels by 2020. And so if you go with the per capita approach, you would assume that you'd be taking into some growth characteristics for the state or for each individual region. So by using a per capita number versus an absolute number, you're sort of already assuming that you're using a future conditions, because you're assuming some growth rate to get you back down to that AAB 32 level that you need to get to. So it's our comments.
Los Angeles?
Yes. Marsha, hi, Mike.
Hi. I told you we'd be back here.
I know. Thank you. You kept your promise, as usual. Well, I would say that current year and future year, once again, if we, if we're going to make sure we update the target in a timely manner, and I know my law is 4 to 8 years, but I would strongly suggest that every 4 years, no more than 4 years, then we can consider to go with the current year condition. But based on the data we have today from ARB's scoping plan, in order to reach the level in 1990, 430 million metric tons, and from today's level, which is 2004 data, we will have to reduce 45 million metric tons. So I believe that's the number we're referring to, right? And unless we're going to have updated data for 2008, I don't know if ARB has had that opportunity to do that yet. So if that is the case, then we have some kind of information here to consider. That is referring to the entire AB 32 and statewide. So my next question will be, what will be the assumed SB 375 number if based on today's condition? And that'll be also 3%, because for 2020, if we have to reduce 174 million metric tons statewide under AB 32 scoping plan, 5 million metric tons is SB 375's responsibility, which represents 3%. So are we saying that it will also be 3% of the 45 million metric tons in today's condition? Thank you.
This is Cesar Espitia with the Orange County Transportation Authority, and I echo the same sentiments that were just displayed. Another question that I have is, if we do these emission reductions, how will they be measured? Will we rely on Impact 2007, or will we then rely on Impact 2009, 2000X? Like, what will be the software that we will be measuring from? And I guess this is more for ARB staff.
Okay, we're gonna take Washaw's question in this last one as part of this is the information that we need to address in the staff in the amended staff analysis for what goes forward in May. I do want to say that based on some of the comments, the recent as well as others, and going back to our RTAC discussion in April, I do think as part of this discussion in May that we need to go back to the language that's in the scoping plan, and we've never really had much discussion about that at the RTAC level. We've passed out the language in the scoping plan to the RTAC members, and we've had a brief staff presentation on it at our kickoff meeting. But I think we have some differences of opinion around the table about how the language in the scoping plan relates to our charge, and it's time to sort of hit that head on and get it clarified. So I think now's the opportunity to do that. Okay, let's go to the Bay Area. Non-RTAC members, any comments on this current versus future year issue in Oakland?
Yeah, one comment. This is Andrew Michael with Bay Area Council. I just think the key thing among many different things here is that we really need to focus on certainty, and we need to integrate AB 32 with SB 375. So I think starting with the uniform standard makes sense for that reason. I think choosing a relative percentage does answer the need to make it regionally, locally focused in terms of coming up with the current conditions and working forward. And I think then reducing from the current year makes sense from getting a certain baseline that we're working from to work back to the overall state AB 32 goals to get back to the 1990 levels, though we do need to incorporate the updates to the data as going forward, as you mentioned, every 8 years or 4 years, if that's possible, but 8 years for sure. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you. Andrew, I'm looking at Sacramento now. Anybody else in the room want to talk about this item? Richard is sprinting to the microphone.
This is Richard Lyon, CBIA. I think as Steve Doyle indicated, we would be inclined to fall with current conditions. And as I was listening to Jerry Walters, I guess the real question, if you take the world as it is today and then move forward, then what is the base year? And, you know, today we're frozen in terms of GDP and the employment picture is really rocky. So we would tend to fall on the current conditions, but the question is, what is the base year?
Right. And what does current mean?
Yeah, what does current mean? So we may want to look back a couple years
right.
when we had more activity in the economy.
Yeah. I think we have something in the spotlight there. We seem to have a lot of people agreeing on current versus future, but we have a lot of questions about what we mean by current. So that's good. That's exactly kind of what we were hoping for out of this discussion. Okay, let's take a deep breath and go to the final topic of interregional travel. For those of you that have forgotten Doug Ito's presentation or come in since, the simple question is, when you're doing accounting for carbon emissions for passengers and light vehicle trucks, and you have in some cases
neighboring regions that have a lot of trips that start in one region and end in another and then reverse themselves because it's a work trip, who gets to be accountable for the carbon emissions of those cross-regional trips? So let's start with San Diego with RTAC members. We'll do that again. Stephen Doyle, do you have anything you want to say about this topic?
All right. Yeah, thank you, Mike. I think it's real easy. We just assign them all to Sacramento and SACOG.
I don't know why I didn't think of that. That's one of the many rewards for being the state capital, right?
That's right. That's right. I tend to be more in line of assigning the trip equally to the sender and the receiver.
Okay. Los Angeles RTAC members?
It's us.
Yes, we're split around here. my thought is that it should be split 50-50 when decide on the rest of the allocation, because you've got people who choose to live out of the outskirts, and they're going to cause more trips, and then you've got cities that will have a lot of industry and they're looking for, you know, a lot of distribution centers. But to me, the fairest way and probably the easiest way is just split it 50-50. I know we do that at our Transportation Commission, for example, with the funds that don't go to transit, it, you know, goes into a regional pot. And I kind of like that idea the best, but I know I'm not in the majority here, so let's turn it over to others.
Well, I don't know whether I'm in the majority or minority, but I would like to understand more that the different impacts between splitting 50-50 and actual distances traveled within the region. So I lean a little more toward actual than split artificially, but I would like some more information from staff about the different impacts of that.
This is Michael Wu. My tenants do not want to treat areas don't do their fair share of providing housing with other areas that do provide their share of housing. So I'd be in favor of a 50-50 split.
Michael, you broke up a little bit. Can you just say that again?
This is Michael Wu. I just wanted to say that I think that on an equity basis that it does not make sense to treat areas that provide their fair share of affordable housing the same way that we treat areas that do not provide a fair share of affordable housing. So I'm inclined to not support a 50-50 split.
So what do you suggest?
I'm not sure what I suggest as an alternative, but I'm just saying that I don't think all areas should be treated equally.
Okay.
Mike, are you open to staff or
no? No, these are RTAC members. So let's go to the Bay Area.
Well, actually, I am personally interested in hearing what everybody else has to say on this, but I think what Mike Wu said is worth considering, in that, you know, what we're really trying to do is, at least in this region, what we've been trying to do is trying to get the region to produce housing over the course of time, which we've been less than successful at doing, which has caused more housing to be produced outside the region, generating a lot of interregional trips. And therefore, it would seem to me, based on that, that you wouldn't want to punish those who had then produced that housing outside the region for generating the trip that was largely created by this region that didn't produce the housing that would have alleviated the trip. So, you know, I think what Mike was trying to get at is something that we should look at hard. How you do that might be very complicated, but you know, you guys at CARB, you're good at sort of technical stuff like this. You probably could figure it out. But that would be the thinking, and you know, that you should not necessarily just split it because, you know, people are starting in one place and ending up in another. You sort of have to look underneath that. How you do that, I, you know, don't know. Maybe my colleagues here would have a thought about it.
I guess I just wanted to echo that, you know, the job housing balance is a great concern, and we need to consider the ability of different regions to feasibly provide a job housing balance. And it may be that certain regions are trying to increase their, you know, amount of jobs to match housing, but simply haven't been able to do so. And it may be that putting housing near the jobs is more feasible. But, you know, I don't know. I just think that's something that we need to consider. I also wanted to ask one question of staff, which is, how is this done for air quality purposes right now? How are these miles assigned to regions for current conformity purposes? And you know, and are there any lessons to be learned from that process?
Amanda, this is Kurt. You were asking the question in the context of conformity purposes. The VMT that is used in the conformity budget is the activity within the geographic boundary of the region. So it's split at the border, if you will, would be the short answer.
This is Mike Ross, and a couple of observations. One is, I echo what some others have said about needing to take into account the areas that the regions that have done a better job of providing affordable housing. But we also need to recognize in doing that it's harder for some areas because of land prices and desirability to provide that affordable housing than it is for others. And second observation is that we divide it into regions, but those lines are ultimately arbitrary, and the reason there are these interregional trips is because the regions have grown. I think it's becoming
okay. Let's go to the RTAC members in Sacramento.
This is Andy Chesley from San Joaquin, the affordable housing mecca for the Bay Area. Oh, actually, I appreciated both Jim Wunderman and Michael Wu's comments on this one. There will have to be some shared responsibility. I do understand that. But the question about affordable housing and how to address jobs housing balance, which has other impacts outside of just the Bay Area and San Joaquin County, as we push housing pressure for our residents, who are working in San Joaquin County, we push them elsewhere as housing prices are bid up in our region for the Bay Area. So there does need to be, I'm not sure how to do this, but there does need to be a way to address that affordable housing question in this balance.
Okay. This is Jerry. I'm going to come down on the side of a split, and 50-50. I think has advantages of being a simpler way to go about it. And I think it does assign responsibility where responsibility is due. The generators of the trip become then responsible. Whether they're the job place or the residential place, they share equally in the responsibility for generating that trip. It's also, in practice at least, consistent with the way traffic engineers do their nexus analysis under AD 1600. SB, no. Andy says no. Andy does it differently. So, as I was saying, in general, as a rule. But I think that there are a couple of other phenomena that that this general kind of approach incentivizes that go beyond just the job housing question, and that is, it can, if we do this appropriately and share the responsibility fairly, it can also provide some incentives for those regions that are housing rich to do work a little bit harder to get jobs within their region. It's not just getting housing in the regions that are jobs rich. That's part of the solution. And then another matter that we haven't talked about, but that in VMT generation terms is the elephant in the room, is retail. And where regional retail is located often speaks a lot to you know, who has the influence over that retail and who derives very direct sales revenue, tax revenue benefits from that. So for those regions that are successful in putting the mega retail complex in their region and drawing trips in from the adjoining regions,
I think that those, that first region is already enjoying benefit for that accomplishment, and therefore shouldn't get additional benefits for not, as a result, not being responsible for the trips that it has to drag in from other regions to pay those sales tax. So generally, I think some split is important. I tend towards a 50-50 as a matter of opinion.
Okay, let's go back around to the staff. Fresno and other people, anybody? Fresno, comments on the interregional travel issue?
Yes, this is Tom Jordan again, and I also wanted to support the comments made by Michael Wu and others that you know, there's a strong housing, affordable housing component of SB 375 as well, and I think that needs to be incorporated. I don't know that assigning it all to the destination would be appropriate, but something other than 50-50. And then this just brings up another topic of there is potentially another way of rewarding or grading people based upon the policies they implement rather than on a modeled numeric outcome, and I just want to bring that up for longer-term thought and discussion.
Okay. Diego?
This is Quint Daniels again. I want to echo what a couple of people said about the housing. While we don't necessarily have an opinion on it, we think it's an interesting concept and it needs to be explored. In terms of the split, I think we would defer more towards a proportional split, the same way that air quality is handled now. And you know, I'll give you an example of something that's unique to, or probably not unique to our region, but particular to our region, you know, with jobs and housing. And we have people who work in North San Diego or live in North San Diego County in Oceanside or Carlsbad or places like that, and they'll commute up to Irvine and vice versa from Temecula and Riverside County back into our region for jobs in Escondido. And if you look at, you know, just the split, the drive from Oceanside to the county line to Skaggs region and then the drive from there to Irvine, maybe 15% of that is in San Diego County versus, you know, the other 85% that's in Orange County. So I think a 50-50 split is too simple. And then in addition to that, with the 50-50 split, I'm not for sure how you would handle trips that originate and end outside of your region but go through your region. So for us, for example, trips that originate in Baja and continue north to L.A. or other regions, or even trips that originate in Imperial County and Skaggs region, travel through our region along the I-8 corridor and up north into the L.A. region to Orange County, you know, I'm not for sure how those would be accounted for in a 50-50 split. So,
I think we're going to assign the through trips to Shasta County. Okay, Los Angeles?
Yes, Asha. Well, first of all, Mike and ARB staff, I think you've done a great job in illustrating this chart for interregional. But I just have a suggestion. Perhaps we should include the multiple MPOs, more than two, so we can show some trips that are actually passing through some MPOs. And certainly, if we go 50-50 split, it will account for the entire trip length. But the passing trip on BMTs will not be needed to be accounted for. That's just clarification now. Please keep in mind that although we do have some survey we call Hodong survey to try to get some basic idea about where people come, where people go out of the region, number one, I don't think we can afford to conduct such survey on an annual basis. And number two, I don't think the sample survey will actually capture the entire trip making. So that's number one. I don't believe our financial capacity can afford to conduct sample that's representative. Then number two, I do want to mention that please keep in mind if we try to ask each MPO to capture whatever the trip or BMT falls into that particular MPO, either that's passing through or generated from other MPO, if we don't have consistent data, consistent tools, capacity, and analysis. I'm not sure if those kind of travel behavior BMT can be captured fairly. So at present time, we really suggest probably consider just split from origin, between origination and destination for MPO, because eventually we believe it will balance out. And perhaps for one particular travel pattern, one MPO gets more benefit than the other not. But overall, we think this is probably the relatively better way to do for now. Perhaps 4 years down the road, when we consider the update the target and other information, we can revisit. Thank you.
Can I just add one other thing towards the 50-50 split concept? There are a lot of cities that look to try to get regional shopping centers. And you know, to me, if we just put it on the burden of the folks that choose to live at the outskirts and not share equally with the cities that are building, you know, specifically generators for them to come, I think we're not capturing the full intent of SB 375.
This is Greg. I kind of second that, and I think it was prompted by what Mike Blue said. It almost seems that if we're really going to get at land use, then how we assign the inter-regional trips really has to do with the planning that's being done and the root causes, and is it smart growth consistent or not, in order to figure out who really is bearing the responsibility or should bear the responsibility for the grants.
This is Elaine Chen. I think with the air quality planning background, the preference system would be consistent with the air quality. I think the future years when we try to do a 10-minute demonstration, when we relied on BMT how to assign mobile source emissions, it would be better if the two would talk to each other, although it doesn't have to. That if we want to assign the burden to the cause of the BMT, then you know we can create a separate system here. At this point, I just hope that we'll be mindful that the same BMT data will be used for other planning purposes. Will be difficult to explain to the public why they are different.
Okay. Good stuff. Ready to go to the Bay Area? We're in the Bay Area. Where I am now.
We have no additional comments from the Bay Area.
Sacramento, we have people headed to the microphone. Mr. Higgins wins the race. No, Autumn wins the race.
Autumn wins. So Autumn Bernstein with Climate Plan. I want to make 2 points, and the first is kind of building on what the previous speaker said. I think we need to go beyond simply saying who's responsible for which trip and really think about how can we ensure the regions are working together to actually plan for solutions that will address interregional travel. And, in fact, there's a very poorly timed meeting happening in Davis right now about the I-80 corridor in the mega region and how the Bay Area and the Sacramento region can work together, and it's unfortunate they didn't do it this afternoon. So that's the first point. I think that I would encourage the RTAC to think about ways that you can go beyond simply allocating the trip and really encouraging regions to work together through the SCS process. The second point that I want to make, when we're talking about interregional trips, Jerry mentioned that it's not just commute trips, there's also retail. But there's a third kind of trip, and that's recreation. And this is particularly relevant to places like the Tahoe Basin, the Central Coast, like the Monterey Bay Area. Whereas in the Tahoe Basin, I can speak to 75% of the trips in Tahoe are generated outside of the region. So there's no way that Tahoe can address its targets without looking at coordination with places like TACOG and the Bay Area. So I would encourage you to think about how recreational trips play into that as well.
My talking points have been stolen because that was precisely where I was going. I think we are framing the question too narrowly around job housing trips, and recreational trips comes into mind and I thought about Napa and Tahoe as well as pass through traffic. How do we deal with that? And just a comment about what is in 375 going forward is there's a sentence that was placed in the housing element law that changes how HCD will assign housing numbers to a region, and it has to account more directly now for jobs created in the region. So going forward, that should be addressed. However, as Mr. Rossin pointed out, you know, that requires planning for it, but land market factors may still drive the housing to cheaper locations, and so that doesn't necessarily guarantee it's going to get built that way. But at least there's a provision from an entitlement standpoint that there will be more zoning up front in place for those type of housing. Finally, in terms of the last point that was just made, and I'll echo it, when I take a look at the interregional travel models here, and we have these five choices, and I'm hearing, you know, split between, I'm wondering if the best way to do it isn't some kind of presumption of a split, whether that's, you know, done on trip A or trip B, but also acknowledge that the two regions may negotiate their own best settlement within their SCS, and that would be represented by trip D in your chart. In other words, there's a presumption, but if the two regions come together and work out something that works for them, then it could be different. And that would be a way to kind of encourage that interregional collaboration. So I'm glad we agree.
Hey, Mike, this is Amanda in the Bay Area. Can I ask a question for staff to bring us an answer to it at a subsequent meeting?
Sure.
This is just a matter of perspective. I'm just curious, what percentage of the entire state's VMT burden is these interregional trips or you know, is constituted by these interregional trips? Just to understand what we're talking about. I had heard it was something like 10%, but I'm very curious what we're talking about. And then of that, what is the commute burden, what's retail, and what, you know, what's recreational? I think that, you know, both Autumn and Bill Higgins make excellent points. We don't want to just discourage economic activity. We don't want to discourage people from taking trips. But I am curious, you know, what are we talking about? How important are these trips in the bigger picture?
Okay. Request noted. I will warn you that I think a part of the answer is, because we don't have yet a functional statewide travel model, that some of these very excellent questions we're not going to have definitive data for. But I think some of them we will have some information that will be.
Mike, this is Clint in San Diego again. I wanted to ask one question for staff to follow up on as well, is the idea of an arbitrator right now for our forecasts, our population estimates. You know, we have to go to Department of Finance and verify that our numbers match within 3%, and if not, then we have to sort of go through a due process with them. And the same thing with HCD for our housing needs. And it would seem as though, you know, maybe this might be a place for the statewide model to be that arbitrator between the regions to help settle disputes. And I don't know if that's Caltrans or CTC or ARB or who it is, but staff may want to explore who that arbitrator would be.
Okay, let me do this. I think this has been exactly the kind of input that we were hoping for these interim meetings, and I just think this has been enormously productive. I don't want to drag on a meeting that's about to close early, but I do think I'll just do a final call around the state to see if anybody else has a final comment or question that they want to make on anything that we've talked about so far before we shut this down. So, Fresno, you have any final thoughts? Any of you there?
Yes, this is Tom Jordan. Very briefly, just one more addition to what I had closed with before. I think there is another way to do this rather than a modeled, greenhouse gas number. In general, I think you can identify the types of policies that are going to move the model and look at a system that gives regions credit for implementing those policies, kind of a points for policies type approach. It gets rid of a lot of the problems of areas that you cannot control, like how fast you grow, interregional trips, and a lot of those things become less of an issue if you just directly focus in what are the kinds of things that are going to move the model and then give regions credit for implementing those types of measures. So I just wanted to add that comment at this point.
Thanks. We have more.
Yeah, this is Troy Hightower again at Kern-Cog, and I just want to make a couple comments. One, I think it's very important that the way these workshops are going and that the collaboration that's involved with all the different parties, I think that's important. And then, fun, I would encourage to have more meetings and workshops like this.
Okay.
Fresno's done.
Okay, on to San Diego, final call.
Yes, this is Elisa Arias with Sandag. A couple of times during the meeting, there were references to ARB monitoring progress towards achieving the targets, and we'll be interested in finding out how ARB plans to accomplish that, either now or at a future meeting.
Okay, we'll put that in the hopper as a question for future discussion. Anything else from San Diego?
Yes, this is Kurt Croninger again from Sandag, and I just wanted to touch on the VMT versus GHG issue. A lot of the discussion today has been around the assumption that VMT will be the proxy for greenhouse gas emissions, especially when we talk about things like per unit targets being based on per driver. Then you're putting all your eggs in the VMT basket, and Sandag feels strongly that there are a lot of other factors other than VMT that contribute to greenhouse gas emissions that need to be taken into account. In addition, we need to be cognizant of the fact that as time goes on, VMT will become less and less accurate as a proxy due to changes in technology, changes in fuel mix, and things of that sort.
Okay, anything else from San Diego?
No, that's it for us.
Okay. Los Angeles area?
Yes, Marsha. Just two things. Number one, Mike, you have already responded that I didn't produce another RTAC meeting. This one and probably subsequent ones will specifically get into what kind of a level of effort we are looking into with regard to if we choose to go with current conditions. Reduction, right? And the other comment is that I would want to suggest that ARB probably needs to really have a more technical capacity and probably more funding too to ensure the statewide level of current condition estimate is up to date, because so far the scoping plan we're still using 2004 as the current condition. But we are going to go with the reduction effort from today's level, the up-to-date information will be very important. Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to compliment staff. I think it's a really good report, and that really helped us to have a good meeting.
Okay. Bay Area?
Yes, thank you. I think we all agree that the staff has, is doing a really fine job of trying to, get this into a format where we can make decisions based on, an approach, and options that address the issues. So I think we all appreciate that. From my take, we see this as an opportunity in our region to try to create a scenario whereby, unlike before, incentives will be in place for us to do smarter planning. And we hope that that's a statewide goal as well, or that other regions embrace that as well, because I think that that's a feature that's similar in other regions, although it doesn't, you know, probably doesn't apply equally. It certainly is different in different places. So, you know, to my thinking, and this may not reflect my colleagues and may not reflect the feeling around the state, you know, as we go through this, you know, I think it's as important to think about the world of what's possible if we do this the right way as much as it is to think about creating a system that reflects what is going to happen and then, or is happening or will happen anyway without this, and then fitting in a model that sort of addresses that. So, you know, that may be a little bit different than the way we're approaching it. I don't know. But, you know, my thinking is, hey, we, you know, we have one shot at this. This portion of the scoping plan is a small but important piece, and it's an opportunity piece for all of us to, you know, try to do something maybe a little bit better as a result of the state law. And, you know, at the same time, we do recognize that, you know, this is a challenge for us and for everybody, and, you know, we don't want to be foolhardy about it either. So, you know, there's definitely a balance that's called for. And, you know, I think I see that in the approach that the staff is taking and that everybody is talking about, but that's just as I hear, you know, what we've been saying, and I just wanted to point that out. Just my thing.
Okay.
So, one more comment from the Bay Area is Jim Andrew again. One following up on the point, and something more technical. I know it's not technically the RTAC's charge to be recommending things beyond the confines of what the legislation requires RTAC to deal with, but to Jim's point, a lot of this is going to be more difficult to achieve unless, well, at least in my view, it'll be easier to achieve some of these goals with perhaps some follow-up legislation about how some land use planning actually happens, including, you know, freeing up money for cities and areas to do advanced planning, area plans, and that type of stuff. I know that's legislation that's been out there for some time, and budget issues are making anything like that difficult. But the more that the voice from RTAC, who is dealing with these issues and how we actually achieve that, can weigh in on the broader issue of how do we take advantage of these opportunities that Jim mentioned, I think it's something to keep in mind as this process develops until September. The more technical comment is on the interregional trips. Depending on the magnitude of this overall problem, Amanda's point that she made earlier, one approach would be just to split it at the jurisdictional boundary, but then allow each region to enter into exchange agreements like is currently possible in RENA, from when cities and counties and other cities can actually make agreements to swap. And that kind of gets at the point that Autumn made earlier about, you know, encouraging regions to work together. That's actually a way to maybe formalize that encouragement, and maybe a way to cut through some of the real challenges with this interregional trip problem, particularly if it's not a really huge problem as a magnitude of a percentage of the overall trips in the state.
Okay. Sacramento, final call.
This is Andy Chesley. I'd like to thank the staff as well. I'd also like to thank my fellow RTAC committee members who have a particularly difficult task of merging technical knowledge and capabilities with policy development, far more complex than we normally find committee members having to deal with. So thank you to all those who are teaching themselves.
And I'll just add my final comment to that, which is it's evident from this discussion how complex this issue is, but even more important than that, I think it's evident how good it is that there is this big inclusive process involved in trying to surround this, because I'm certain from this conversation that we're collectively getting smarter about this, and our odds of RTAC having a good recommendation and ARB setting good targets are going up. So I like that. I like that trajectory, and I add my compliments to the staff. It was great work done on very tight timeline, and don't think you're going to get a rest now because the calendar doesn't change, and we come back together in early May. So
Thank you, everybody. We're done.
The leader has disconnected. This call will now end.